Hello and welcome along to Northumberland FA podcast from the sidelines with myself, Gary Middleton, and special guest today, Newcastle United under 11, under 12 lead coach, Michael Pedley. Michael, great to have you on from the sidelines today.
Morning, Gaz. Great to join you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, no problem, Mike. Michael, we're going to discuss today designing practices to develop the learning for the players. Just before we start, can you just explain to everyone listening in a little bit about your coaching career, your coaching journey, and your current role at Newcastle United Academy?
Yeah, of course, yeah. So originally, went through the academy system at Leeds United and played a little bit of non-league and then started coaching early 20s, did a number of years over in America, came back, then worked part-time at Leeds, then got my first full-time role at Doncaster Rovers as head of the foundation phase, which was pre-academy through to 12s, and then I am just finishing my fourth season now at Newcastle United as the under-11 and under-12 lead phase coach.
Michael, is your passion, you know, just thinking about that journey there, working from pre-academy through the foundation phase, has your passion always been around that phase?
Yeah, I'm really interested in the formative years, especially 11s and 12s. And I think the reason behind that is they have the most transitions in these age groups as they will throughout their journey.
Yeah.
So if you think about it from a format's point of view, they'll go through three different types of match formats. They will more often than not transition from little school to big school as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of interesting transitions that occur before even a ball's kicked.
Mm.
So I find that fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, it is interesting. And you talk about the change of formats. Yeah, obviously the FA is going through a lot of changes at the minute, which is all positive. What's your thought on the smaller formats to develop the individual moving forward in their playing journey, really?
Yeah, I think it's only going to benefit the players. And ultimately, that's the main thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so I think having the increased amount of touches, passes, dribbles, attacking and defending duels, goal scoring opportunities, defending goal opportunities, I think that can only benefit a player's journey. We at the academy in the foundation phase have done multiple different formats throughout the season. Excuse me. So that could be 1v1 with a goalkeeper all the way through to 11v11 at under 12. But yet again, at under 12, we've probably only played four or five 11v11s all season. So we really strip it back and look at the smaller formats to benefit the players as best we can.
Yeah, fantastic. Michael, going back to the topic today then, before we plan and design our sessions, there's an awful lot to think about before we even start designing the practices.
Yeah, no, you're dead right, guys, and I think it's around having a real clear objective, first of all. So a real specific theme of what it is that you're going after to start with, and what you're wanting out of it. So, for example, it might be a theme such as playing through midfield, and the specific football objective to that might be around receiving with pressure from behind. And I always remember this quote around, you know, sometimes coaches, we can try and go after too much in too short a period of time. And I think, you know, when you chase six rabbits, you know, you're not going to be able to catch one. So I think it's around having a real clear objective about what it is that you're going after. But I also think, as part of the, before the planning and the designing has to come the thinking, definitely. But I think part of the thinking is the review of what's happened previous. So if I give you an example, it might be little Johnny is consistently receiving the ball and then planning what to do.
Yeah.
And he's having the ball taken off him. So that would be part of the review process and the thinking. So then that would be part of and the start of the design of the session, as an example.
Mm.
So then when you look at something like that, it's okay, well, what is the problem? Is it around the receiving? Probably not. It's more towards maybe the planning and the scanning beforehand. So the things around when to scan, why to scan, what you're interpreting when you're scanning, what's the decision making once you've scanned, and then it may be around the planning of what to do before we even get it.
Yeah, so what you're saying there, Michael, is really it's stripping it right back to reviewing the process first before we even start looking at the practice design.
Yeah, I think I think that's really important. And I think, you know, if I speak through the kind of process that I would go through for planning an under 12 session at Newcastle United, it would firstly start with who do I have, what do they need individually, and then how are we going to give them the practice opportunities. So if we use little Johnny as an example, I would always start with the dual in mind. So in terms of planning a practice, having looked at games and looked at training sessions, is the dual going to be coming out as often as possible? So if we're saying little Johnny needs to work on his planning and scanning, but he also needs to have pressure from behind, as an example, with the theme being playing through midfield, my session design would start with that dual in mind, and I would build around that. So then,
and Michael, Pets, that's just going to be making sure that there's lots of repetition of developing that learning within that, right? And saying,
absolutely, So I think around relevance, it's really important that it's in the area of the pitch that it would occur most.
Yeah.
So really, really basic, playing through midfield, would need to be in the midfield. And we need him to be facing his own goal, and he needs to be receiving the ball to his feet with pressure from behind. And there needs to be space behind to be able to have an exit.
Yeah.
So essentially, you're watching what you're seeing from the game and you're trying to transfer it into a practice design situation for training.
Mm.
And then it would be around the realism. So are they practicing what the problem in the game produces?
Yeah.
And then it would be around the repetition. So I see this... sometimes I've done it myself when, for example, finishing practice and it's been pass to a finish.
Yeah.
Well, actually, if you're working on finishing, work on finishing. So instead of it being pass finish, what about if it was just pass finish or just finish? Because then you're going to get a lot more repetition. It's a lot more bang for your buck on your theme.
Mm, absolutely. And that last little bit that you said, Peds, around, you know, pass finish, and you're working on finishing, you're going to be able to get stuck into the real detail around that type of finish that the player's actually got then. Without that build-up, is the example that you said of three or four passes before the finish, because actually that might break down before it actually gets to a finish.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can put levels of complexity into that.
you can make it challenging for the players, depending on their level.
So, you know, if we take it back, so little Johnny needs to work on his receiving with pressure from behind. He needs to be more effective at planning and scanning. So how can we challenge him? How can we challenge him to do that? So it might be around him recognizing when to drop to receive the ball. From a coach's noticing point of view, it might be around watching him scan. It might be a case of one of the best coaching tools I use is clickers. So how many times can he scan effectively in a dual-based practice? Because again, if you're thinking around repetition, well, he needs to be in a position to be able to do it. And yeah, games are obviously great in training, but having a dual-based practice means that he's going to have a lot of goes at doing it. Yeah. And ultimately, if he needs to get better at it, he needs to be in a situation where he's going to have a lot of goes at doing it. So that might be a case of challenging him in terms of his scanning to interpret it and then make decisions around what to do once we've got it. And it could be as well that he matches up with somebody and make it competitive too. So it might be little Johnny and little Paul.
Yeah.
Where they'll play against each other. And I don't mean as in like a game against each other, but it might be in terms of how many times can they scan in the right direction? And that might just be a start point.
Yeah. So, Pets, what you're saying there, you know, is how we're dealing with differentiation within your groups, whether that's grassroots or in your environment, on stretching the players, the strivers within the group, and then how are we managing that group of players, them individuals, that are the co-op, as far as an example.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, matchups is the first kind of protocol. So knowing your group, I would regularly do it in training sessions. I would match players up. I did it last night, actually. We did a 4v4 practice, and the players were matched up as best they could be in terms of levels. So they got a good stretch against each other.
Yeah.
Now, obviously that can't always be the case, although that would be my first protocol. I think the next bit would be around individual objectives. So if you have a striver against somebody who is like a struggler within the group, it might be a case of different objectives. So one player has to win the duel 3 times. But if the other person wins it once, then they get a point.
Yeah.
Obviously, there would be individual conversations there. But it's just stimulating and challenging both.
Yeah.
On different levels based on where they're at and what they need.
Yeah, because that challenge emotionally for the player that's up against one of the strivers may be, yeah, they may not fancy that from the start off by looking at that duel, but actually if their challenge is just to do something once over the opposition doing it 3 times, they actually feel a little bit more confident, would I be right in saying? Within that psychological area,
and essentially, you're almost handicapping them there, aren't you?
Yeah,
you're trying to put a leveler in that gets them both a stretch, in a way that they can both be one competitive, two engaged, and three really stretched within the practice too. And sometimes that can just be a feel within the session as well. So it can be adapted during the session.
It's like in the horse race, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah,
that was the horses that are striving get handicapped with a bigger weight, don't they? Great point that, Peds. Peds, can you give any examples about times when you've designed practices to ensure that the most amount of repetition of the theme comes out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I mentioned, I would start my practices with the jewel in mind. So I think having a jewel-based practice, and look, if you've got two coaches and 14 players, I would highly recommend two groups of seven. Two different types of practices, and then flipping them over. And what that would do is that would give a repetition of theme in two types of different practices. But the main aspect to this is, if you've got two groups of seven rather than one group of 14, the repetition is double.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've been playing around with recently is doing a jewels-based practice at the start, and then doing exactly the same practice in the last 10 or 15 minutes. So we might do a jewels-based practice, a technical, a possession or a function, a game, and then we would go back to the jewel. And there's a couple of reasons for that I'm having a play about with. One, I want to see what learning's taken place over the last hour or hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Because they get to have an instant re-go. So I think that from that aspect, that's important, that the kids are like, oh, well, you know, in the first 10 or 15 minutes, some players might have just been getting the hang of it. Oh, great, I get to have another go at it in the same evening.
Yeah.
But the other thing is they'll be fatigued. So, you know, when they first come in, they're fresh, they're really lively and busy. Well, what are they like an hour and 15 into the practice? When they've had a really intense session and then they're chucked back into the jewels? Can they still deal with it when they're tired? So that would be one example. High repetition through jewel-based practices. And then the other one, I think a multi-ball practice is really worthwhile. So, for example, if we're talking about repetition of theme, let's just move it to a finishing practice, for example. So instead of doing one finish and then restart, what if they did three? And what if they came from different areas? So it might be one and two touch finishing. Well, in fact, let's say one touch finishing in and around the box. So that's the theme. But there's going to be a three-ball multi-ball here. And it might be one with like a forward run to a finish first time. Then it could be a cutback first time finish. Then it could be a run back through to a wall pass finish, for example. So having that multi-ball and just layering your practice would allow more repetition for the theme.
Yeah. And from different areas of the finishing area as well, which is what happens in the game.
And what I've found is the kids love stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because there's a little bit of uncertainty around kind of which ball's next. So they're not in autopilot by any means. So I found it really engaging for the lads.
Yeah, mate, I'm going to put you on the spot again here. So how would you design practices for multi-ability players? There's probably a number of coaches listening into this, working in grassroots, that have a real variety within their group. So when we're planning our practices, what do they look like for the dealing with differentiation within the group?
Yeah, it's a great question, Gaz. And I think previously, when I was in a part-time role, I worked full-time in schools. delivering PE, and we had groups that would be year three to year six all in one class, and we'd have a year three who was at an academy. We'd have year six girls who were far too cool for school and just weren't bothered in terms of participation. Yeah. And I always remember it trying to get everybody engaged and challenged in a competitive environment. And I always think back to like spinning plates. So if we go back to what was said earlier about who do we have and what do they need? Well, yeah, the differentiation obviously there was a lot bigger than, you know, a grassroots team or academy football. But the fundamental of being able to spin plates about what does this person need and what does this person need and how can I engage them in a way that levels everybody to a point where it's competitive for everyone and everyone is getting what they need from the training session. So, as I said, it might be matchups as close as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But if it can't be that, then you've got to think about individual challenges. And that might be challenge cards for them. It could be competition between individuals. It could be one against two. Could be like a me against you, like an almost a, if we're on the same team, but we've both got the same objective. So for example, it might be how many successful forward passes can you do, but also your teammate as well. So you're having a little in-house competition.
Yeah.
Again, I think it goes back to knowing your players, knowing what excites them and what will drive competition for them. And ultimately, yes, the theme of the training session might be around a couple of people's needs in particular, but the importance is around trying to get around everybody, trying to give everybody what they need.
I mean, in my planning process, and sometimes we just think about the whole group, don't we? And actually, we need to think about, yeah, if it's a seven-a-side team, we've got nine players within that group. Every individual and what their needs are before we even start thinking about designing more practices, Michael. Am I right in saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the main things for me when I would be designing a practice would be around having real clarity on the football action that we're wanting to get out.
Mm-hmm.
The next one would be around individual objectives for all players.
Yeah.
And again, that's from knowing the players throughout the season and knowing what they need, and also what it is that kind of that gives them that fire as well to compete. Yeah. Because yeah, we want them to be competing as well.
Yeah, brilliant, Michael. Michael, thanks very much for sharing your knowledge to Dion from the sidelines on designing practices to develop the learner. I hope that helps everyone listening in on how we go about and the process of putting my practices together. And hopefully we'll speak to you soon, Michael.
Brilliant. Last thing I would just say, guys, is keep having the jewel in mind. And if you've got two coaches and 14 players, do two groups of seven.
Yeah.
Rather than 1-14.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate your time, guys.
Cheers, Pids. Thanks very much.